Alright, up at the top of my first walk up to Cumcari. It's January 5th, 2013, and I haven't recorded a long time. Haven't been doing, you know, it's been vacation season. I get a little over a week, kind of built in, leave, in the middle of the year, here for Christmas and New Year's. So now that's after New Year's. I've been back to work for a few days. And I walked during lunch a few times, but didn't make any recordings. So now's the chance to get back to it. Oh, it was a heck of a break. The Staber washing machine, the rear bearings went out, ordered new ones. After I took out the old ones, I realized that it wasn't sealed bearings. It had a port there for adding oil. And I feel a fool because I could have been adding oil all this time and save those bearings. Well, the ones I put in this time, they're permanent, you know, they're permanently sealed. So we'll see how they go. Anyway, once I got those installed, I put it there. Apparently, all the strain put on the motor had done damage to the motor, and it eventually got to the point to where it just didn't run at all. It's a DC motor, so I guess we burned out the bushings, and so had to send them back for repair, $200 later, which is better than buying a new one. The new one costs $300 if you can find it at all. Luckily, they have a pretty good store of spare parts, apparently. Anyway, so and then, while waiting for the motor to come back, we got a wet spot on our front lawn, and sure enough, it kept growing and growing, and every indication was that we had a leak in our water line. Dug down to it, and sure enough, there was a really rough spot, and they cleaned it all up. And well, first I tried just to patch what little just right around it, and just try to put a compression fitting right there, which never works. Or at least it didn't work in this case. I'm kind of glad that I didn't get it to work, because the guys came in later and did a much better job. And we're pondering the whole idea of redoing the whole line. But to be really honest, I'm still on the I'm the moving away track. I'm still working the Shetland process, even at this point. And so put in, well, she would call it a temporary, but I I tend to look at it as permanent. And, anyway, so... So I'm going, I'm just going with the patch as it is right now. Lisa's made a New Year resolution to get out of debt. And so anything major that we were thinking of doing, we're trying, we're praying diligently that it's not required. We were talking last night, or I was talking last night, and said, hey, you know, doing this stuff works into my plans. You know, this is, whether we go to Shetland or not, ultimately, it's a good thing to do. It's a thing that will lead us to more freedom in the future to move, to act, to do whatever it is we need to do. Originally, to pay off the credit card with the proceeds of, oh, I was going to cash out my retirement, which is about, it would probably end up being about $20,000 that I would get net after paying taxes. And, that was going to help us get over there, get set up, pay off that debt, and any number of things. Of course, it didn't happen. That's okay. You know, adding another year to retirement towards this, not even 6 o'clock in the morning. And there's extremely loud, oh, I see why he was running so hard. He's right at the edge of stalling out. So he's having to race. It smells terrible. It sounds terrible. I think that truck is almost a goner. I think it's Granny's neighbor. Thank goodness Granny sleeps really heavy. So, those things don't bother her much. Anyway, so, and just not but a day or two after the water line got fixed, the motor came back, put the washing machine back together, so we are back at our normal operating capacity, which is nice. We live in the barn. It's quite chilly, but we're somewhat accustomed to that. We watched a really wonderful video last night of the letter writer. Made by Christian, oh, I'm going to get his last name wrong, Vuissa. And he did One Good Man. He did The Errand of Angels. I think he might have been involved with The Best 2 Years. I'm not exactly sure. But just really takes the whole concept of LDS cinema to to a whole new level. To a whole new level. And, does an excellent job. So, it's quite, it was wonderful. Beautiful, beautiful story. And had a lot of good meaning and almost inspires you to do, to be a better person, to do better things, try to be better. So, you know, gosh, it's a wonderful movie. Anyway, so, we are pushing forward. And, we had a little on Saturday. Lisa got me this book. It's a really neat book. It's a really neat book of handmade houses. And I already know that to a large degree I wouldn't be allowed to build those kinds of houses in Shetland. You know, Shetland's got this weird whole, you know, freezing time. And to a certain extent it would be a detriment, you know, as I continue slowly to do my ascended family book. I've not gotten to the Shetland specific things, the whole idea of good governance. And that's one of the things, you know, the whole thing about family ascendancy in the first place is that the attitude is government doesn't place any restrictions on families. Well, this is a land of extremely loud vehicles early in the morning stuff. Anyway, diesel truck here. Parked in an abandoned lot. Turned on. Turned away. Oh no, there's a guy in there. There you go. Interesting. Okay. Doing his job, I guess. Anyway. The whole concept of the family opt-out. I mean, you can put all the restrictions you want to on, you know, non-family size scale businesses. You know, ones with lots of employees, as opposed to, you know, two or three. Of course, the family opt-out, which means any laws that are put in place, basically a family acting on its need to provide shelter, clothing, inculcating their family culture, things like this. Government has to give a specific justification. And I don't mean having written a law that says you can't do that. No, it has to be specific to that family situation. To be able to overrule the family interest. And the way you solve that is you simply just don't give government enough money or enough resources to do that very often. So there's two great problems with government. Number one is that in most places, government is allowed to intercede anywhere where it sees fit to do so. That's number one fallacy. Number two, government has unlimited resources with which to express its will. And both of these things have to be severely curtailed. You know, the first is the family opt-out. Families can do as they wish on their own property that they have bought. That is theirs. They may do as they wish. You know, a man's home is his castle sort of thing. And that you will be free of that. It's very interesting. It's said in one way in the United States Constitution, which is a wonderful model of limiting government. But I think it's done even better in the Universal Declaration. You know, more of the worldwide thing. Although, I'd like to see in there a proclamation that this is a natural right and this is not something to which you have to have a government to make this happen. It practically becomes like that, you know. When push comes to shove, you ultimately end up having, you know, you don't end up having any such right unless your government permits you to have it. And due to people, you know, there's plenty of people in this world, you know, it becomes beholden upon some level of government, typically, to make sure that other people cannot infringe on your rights. And that's pretty low on the priority list for most governments. You know, government by its nature, if we were to anthropomorphize it, is a greedy, self-centered, self-possessed person. And you will never get government to act in your favor unless you find some way to twist the circumstance to greatly benefiting government. And don't anthropomorphize it. Don't do it. Because then you start thinking that some president, that some king, that some prime minister who you really like will be able to do battle with this, with evil government and will somehow cow it or put it in its place or whatever. And you can't. It's a huge system. You know, there's lots of... inertial ways. It continues behaving exactly the way it's behaving and seeks to do more so in the future. And so I think that's the danger of anthropomorphizing government, any government entity, is that, you know, you start imbuing it with rights, and the government has no rights, has no rights at all. It is simply an instrument of force and put into the hands of people who want to exercise more power over others. It is an extremely effective instrument. And the best that you can hope to do, I think, is to make it a very blunt sword. You know, to make it as small as possible. Instead of it being a sword, make it a wooden play dagger. And a very ineffective way to interface with others, you know. It's sad when neighbors, for instance, choose to interface with each other through the legal system. So that should always be the last course when all other reasonable ways, and that's what I mean, other ways are reasonable, doing it through the legal system is what has to be done when people just are intractable and can't even be talked to. But yet, continually, you know, violate other people, violate their property, violate this, violate that. You know, that's when you do that. The fact that we run to it almost immediately is a real denigration of people. That we can't handle things in other ways. So, I don't want to get off on that. That's always but that is something that would probably be good to be put in your Senate family book. Is the whole concept of, you know, government should be used last, and probably the best way to make sure that government is used last is to make it so ineffective, to make it so unlikely to go your way. Anybody who touches that system needs to get burned by doing so. You know, to the point to where you say, I really don't want to mess with it. You know. But there will always be a great price to pay for getting government involved in your problems and not having found some larger way of handling it. It's a very interesting day. We got up this morning, 5:30 is when we get out of the house, take Josh to seminary, it's usually at church. And every morning, just been this incredible layer of frost on the car windows. You know, you have to plan for at least 15, maybe 20 minutes of scraping before you can use the thing. And the thermometer said 28. It's typically a little high, so that means that most likely it was in the mid-20s, you know, decently below freezing. Texas State's probably about the same right now, because of course as you approach dawn, this is usually the coldest time. So, and then I was totally impressed that I didn't have to scrape anything. I looked up in the sky, like right now I'm looking up at the sky. It's not as hazy as it was before, but you look up at the moon, and it's hazy. And I found that interesting. I was looking at webcams on Shetland. I have an app on the iPad that work gave me, and it's got webcams attached to a lot of the weather. It's the weather underground, so it's typically weather stations run by just private people, you know. If I ever get some money, I think I would find that a very good service to provide for humanity, is doing one of these private weather stations and putting it up, you know, putting it up on a weather underground. I don't know if I want to do a webcam too, but you know, do whatever it is you do. Anyway, so if you're having a hazy day over most of Shetland too, of course, it's the shortest time of the year. We just barely got through the winter solstice, so days are starting to get longer, but just barely beginning to, you know. It's got a bit of a bell-shaped curve to it, so it's still quite interesting. Anyway, so it was about noon when I looked in Shetland, and of course it's not very bright at all. Sun's very low in the sky, being that close to the Arctic Circle, and hazy. And then I get up and I get out the car, and it's hazy, which is strange for Tucumcari. You know, we tend to have one thing in abundance is clear skies, and today we don't. It's just now getting to dawn. I look over my shoulder here, and what would normally be pinks and purples on the few clouds that are on the horizon, it's a lot more brown-ish looking, a little muddy, and very pretty. But yeah, yet another in what I've seen as a collection over the last year or so, when we got serious about Shetland. I don't know where Lisa stands at this point on the whole Shetland process. I think she's back to humoring me, but she's kind of her. She's awfully nice. She makes, one could easily call it unreasonable demands on it, but I'm not gonna say that, you know. It's her life too. And nothing with which people go out with trepidation, nothing needs to be said like, well, you're being unreasonable, and you go, oh God, you're going to change your whole life, and any expectation she has is unreasonable? Come on. That's not very nice. So, She wants to make a few trips over. And current resources don't even begin to allow anything like that. I mean, I think that's always been one of her biggest things, is she doesn't know if she'll like it. Therefore, you know, she wants to proceed cautiously. But we don't have any kind of resources to proceed cautiously. So, at this point, it has to be, we have to get I have to get more resourceful. Now this is provided for in my patriarchal blessing that I'll have the means to do things. Which I'm sorry, you know. I've had people try and say, oh, but look at what you've got. You've got this, you've got this, you've got resources, it's fantastic. And you go, no, I don't. This is, I live hand to mouth like everybody else does. You go, anything at all happens, you know, this whole digging up our front yard and working on the water line, if it does nothing else, it exemplifies the fact that I have no resources with which to handle any of this stuff. I was hard-pressed to have a plumber finally come out and just do it for me. You know, and that's just, it isn't simply me being a stick in the mud, I think, although I've kind of gotten that kind of attitude about it for fiscal reasons, you know. I don't want to spend money. So, that hasn't happened. And when people say, well, you know, Some things are saved until the afterlife. And I said, what on earth does having, I had the right wording in there a minute ago. What on earth does having these, it wasn't resources, but I use it because I can't come up with the other word. Well, it's to have to do with the afterlife. That's specifically the time when those things don't matter, when you don't have those things. But that it really doesn't matter. It's not a place where that's needed, so it's almost like, well, don't, you know. That's nice. I understand what you're saying. I said, but I don't think it's relevant. I said, the whole thing about having the resources, it is incumbent that it's going to be during this life. And I get frustrated with God. So it's one of my larger frustrations is timing, you know. I say, you know what, you're not going to let me have these resources or have these abilities until I'm so old that they're almost pointless to have. You know, you have to trust God's timing at all times. But I think it would be really much more useful for it to come sooner than later. You know, if I'm 80 years old and at that time all of a sudden, you know, well, you've got all these resources to help the work of the Lord, it just wouldn't have come in handier earlier. Anyway, my thought is, and this isn't to denigrate God or anything like that, is to say that it should come sooner than later. You know, to have these things when you are old is purposeless. You know, by then you're typically spending the majority of your income trying to fight off death, which I have no intention of really ever doing. You know, it's not interesting to me on any level at all to do this. And so, you know, And it should by nature come when you're strong and vibrant and have these abilities more and more, you know. Other aspects of life kick in the older, as you get older, you know. It becomes a question of having more time and being able to do things. Resources. No, it's not resources. I'll have to look it up. Means. It's called means. To have the means to do these things. And I know I've tried to say I'm doing fine means-wise. You know, I'm not starving. But yeah, can I just look, these temple trips that we do, people say, well, you've got that van, you can do that, and you know, you go, really, I'm still paying for that van. And you go, and you also realize that I wouldn't have been able to get that van if it hadn't have been for my mother's resources, that we could just buy it, and that she was my banker on it. You know, this is that is the means, because Lisa was just saying right now, she goes, Jay, she goes, the tires are probably needing to be replaced on the van, and we don't have the money for it. And I said, yeah, you know. So when people say, oh, you've got means, you go, no, I don't. And you go, I've got a few things that need required. And it was done through an interesting mechanism that I have available to me that most people don't. You go, but I don't think anybody, after looking at it for any amount of time at all, would see it as means on any level whatsoever. My battery's running out. I don't know if this thing has died yet. It hasn't. Good. Let me see if I can. Turn down the thing. There, good. Okay. I think that will save me a little bit. At least be able to get home. I was struggling to get my thing charged up. Anyway, so that's one of those things. The whole means thing. I don't think I've gotten there yet. You know, people say, oh, you get too weird about this and about this and about this. And I go, well, let me tell you, here's my list of promises that I have. And I said, and I feel, now I don't know if it's good or right or whatever, I feel driven to try and make this stuff happen. And I don't know if that's being obsessive. I don't know if that's, you know, part of the autism or whatever it is. You know, I don't know. And you go, but I don't think it's just simply a question of sitting and waiting for these things to come. Something has to happen. You don't get great means by working a salary job. I don't have it anymore. At working an hourly job that has no resources to pay overtime. And I'm sorry, even if I worked 80 hours a week and got 40 hours of it was overtime, I wouldn't be, you know, it still wouldn't solve, you know, I don't think that would still handle the question of means. It needs to, you know, my income really needs to get a lot better than it is. Not to denigrate what I have, but to say, you know, I'm sorry, it just doesn't cut the mustard. Of course, in about eight years, all of my children are going to be gone. I'll be in my early 50s. Of course, Lisa will be scratching 60, so we will already starting to face throwing lots of money at healthcare, preserving life, blah blah blah. And you know, it says according to every rational view of it, about the time whatever income I have now would feel more substantial because I don't have children to care for which I have no assurance. You know, I've got difficult children. Not that they are difficult, but they're going to have a difficult life. You know? It says, and I can't foresee any rational waiting game that would make this come to pass. I've got to do something about these things. My family? No. When people go, gee whiz, Jay, why are you going through all this? And you go, I feel it's absolutely necessary. You know, I don't feel like I have any choice on the matter, on any level at all. So, you know, thus comes in the writing, thus comes in all these other things, and hoping that something takes hold, something catches fire, which it hasn't done yet. And I feel a need to throw things out there more stridently so that people can have these things. Well, sorry. So that my patriarchal blessings can come to pass. I know it says these things, that these things shall come to you, and you go, you know, I'm sorry. I am not feeling willing just to sit there and act like there's some waiting game to play. That all of a sudden I'm going to inherit something huge, or, you know, something else is going to happen. Things like that. I've never felt that way. I still acknowledge the fact that it isn't going to happen through my effort alone, on any level at all. If you've heard me talk about my writing on any level, you know that my writing is God telling me what to put down. And it almost becomes, you know, the biggest problem becomes how do you getting yourself into the frame of mind that you can get things down like that. So anyway, that's kind of what this whole week left is trying to do. Is this my family? It is. Oh, what a wonderful bunch. I love my family. They're crazy. They're a crazy bunch. I don't know what's going to happen to us, but I have faith that God will be kind. That's my greatest wish, that God will be kind to me. And I hope I'm just not pissing God off by treading on His territory. I don't want to do that, Father. not some metal. I hope that I am, that they can best be described as. He was straining and trying to do what he was supposed to be doing. And that does not get marked down as a fault. You know, well, you're not going to get that because you were trying too hard. And I couldn't tolerate that. I know it's going to come to me through blessing, you know. I think I've gotten to the point to where I'm not cocky about anything I've ever done. Because it's so obvious to me that these were helps. Anyway, you're starting to hear the traffic. It's getting close to 6:30 probably. Not past 6:30, I think. And life is turning on. And I'm nearly at my destination, so I probably need to stop here. Oh, I'm grateful. You know, I'm grateful to continue to be alive. Grateful for the blessings that I receive and my family. I was concerned about my kids, about my family, and hoping that things go well for them. Here we are, another chance to wave at them all. Okay. Walks over and it's all here to be had. Oop. Let me